Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Just two guys enjoying the Swans. What's better than this, man?
Nothing, man. Can't beat it.
Can't beat it.
Good morning, Sweet World, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. We're back in the Classic Factory, and it feels so good. It's Wednesday, April 13th. I'm J.E. Skeets, and alongside me, as always, we got Tass Mellis.
Feels real good. It feels good to be playing with my my audio knob here again.
That's great. We got a Top Shot Hot Boy right there rocking the No Dunks t-shirt, Trey Kirby. The international man of mystery taking it to the max. New haircut. Same shirt as Trey. It's Lee Ellis.
Friends.
Really, looking sharp, man.
Thanks.
You took a lot off.
Yeah, I did. Well, I did it before the trip because I knew I was going to be doing a lot of snorkeling and seawater and underwater.
I never noticed when we were on on the yard there. You couldn't tell maybe with the cans on.
That's the thing. And I didn't realize until last year how much extra maintenance goes into a trip to the beach when you got long hair. It's not fun.
It's true.
Not fun. Sure. So trimmed up, look sharp, feel great.
Well, you look great. Nice to be right back beside you,
too. Thank you.
And speaking of being back from vacation, super producer, super tanned, JD.
Oh, not that tan. I got to see my dermatologist next week, and he's not going to be happy with me. But
Nothing healthy about a tan. That's what they say.
Nah, except you look great.
You got a glow to you, though.
I really do. That's just the rest and relaxation you're seeing.
Did you consume any of our shows while you were down there?
I tuned in live while I was waiting for my COVID test to come back.
Okay.
So that was enjoyable. I popped in from time to time.
Yeah, he texted me. He did text me and said, "What's up with your elbow?"
Yeah.
Because I showed my bloody elbow, and I texted right back. I said, You must have been waiting for a COVID test because it was the last day. You had to find something to do.
That's right. I was like, are these guys even still doing a show? I don't know. But then I also tuned into No Buffs this morning because I had to watch. I couldn't watch Survivor while I was down there.
Wow.
I just couldn't get it. I mean, I probably could have, but I didn't try that hard.
Yeah.
I opened Paramount Plus and was like, doesn't work here. Oh, well.
I guess I could get a VPN, but not going to be doing that.
Yeah,
no.
Exactly.
So you had a good time, though.
Awesome time. Great to be back. Puerto Vallarta is the greatest.
Okay. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. I know you guys are excited. We're back in the Classic Factory. So like the video, subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube, comment away, share the show. Email in your NBA questions to nodunks@theathletic.com. Keep those cues coming, guys. And before we get into it here, don't forget to check out yesterday's No Breaks. Yes. Trey and Graydon had a very special guest on. It's not Charles Leclerc. It is Lee Ellis there. Noted petrol head, noted rev head, noted Aussie head, noted nanner head, Lee Ellis. I've had a chance to listen to most of this, and it's a really fun episode. So, Lee, you knocked it out of the park. You're great.
Well, you know, I said to Trey on the show, anytime I get a chance to brag or boast about Melbourne doing something, you know I'm going to flex those muscles pretty hard. So I had to do it. I had to step in. It was a lot of fun. Trey and Graydon know their stuff, and I was sort of watching from the outsides, but managed to have some fun too with the boys.
So check out No Breaks that dropped yesterday, and No Breaks does have its own YouTube feed and podcast feed. Okay, tons to get to here. We had two really entertaining games last night, the first two playing games to discuss. Then later on in this show, we'll get to doing a little deep dive and making our predictions for some of the Eastern Conference series because, well, we now know it's Celtics versus Nets. We'll touch on that one, and we'll make our predictions for the other two that we know, being the Bucks and Bulls and the Sixers and the Raptors. But we start in the Target Center. Tass, what a insane game. I don't even know. I'm fascinated to find out or learn where you even want to start with this one, but the Wolves defeat the Clippers 109-104 as they get the seventh seed and will go on to face the Grizzlies. Where do you start with this crazy game?
Definitely not starting with the officiating, despite it taking as long as a baseball game out there.
Three hours, man.
Yeah, but hey, that's how it just reminds you how good we have it on a night-to-night basis when a regular game takes 2.5, and this was a long one. I'm starting with Karl Anthony Towns because the Clippers did such a good job, such a good job of just taking him out of his flow. They start Nick Batum on him and just sending that double. But they did a good job of taking him out of the game, but he also did a good job of taking himself out of the game.
We called this on Monday's podcast.
He got frustrated.
It's exactly what we talked about happening.
Is this the game that he grows and decides, you know, to play within himself? And he did it for a little bit, but then just the bad fouls, the hook to Robert Covington, and then his fifth foul where he plowed into two smaller players on the same play, like not once, but twice. Of course they're going to just flop on you. And then going over the back of Paul George to foul out.
Yeah.
Early in the fourth quarter when it looked like he may be getting it going. Kudos, I think, to Wolves head coach Chris Finch for not using his challenge on any of those Karl Anthony Towns plays. Maybe we need to keep our star in a game. He didn't panic whatsoever. He fouled out. The Wolves recover. How the hell did they recover with their all-star, all-NBA guy out of the game? Well, I mean, resiliency, I think that's the first thing. It looked like this team could just fall apart against the more veteran team or the more experienced team with the Clippers. But I think the two big shots at the end of the first quarter, the end of the third quarter, they had two buzzer-beating threes that kept them in the game. Both times, it was a nine-point deficit, but two role players, Jalen Noel in the first and then Malik Beasley in the third, made it a six-point game that just held them together. And really, besides the resiliency, some pure star shot making. That's what it was. D'Angelo Russell, he had a huge 14-point second quarter. Again, when it felt like maybe the Clippers are going to extend this lead, Russell, 5 for 5 in the second quarter, keeping this team close to the Clippers. He ended with 29 points. He hit a huge wide-open jumper with about 4 minutes left in the fourth to really give the Wolves a little bit of breathing room. And then Anthony Edwards, man. 30 points, 5 of 11 from 3, 20-year-old that we talk about. Is this his team? We talked about earlier in the season. I mean, who cares really right now? It's just a combo of him and D'Angelo Russell doing it. And I say star shots because just guys in his face at the three-point line, willing to be comfortable and just take these threes and hit him. Again, 5 of 11 from 3, 20, just 21 shots, they get 30 points. So impressive, and he got a dunk with 4 minutes left that unfortunately for the Clippers, they had just one big malfunction there where you can't have a breakaway. Like in a half-court set, it was a jump ball scenario, and the Wolves won the jump ball, and Anthony Edwards just got a free lane,
yeah.
And that shouldn't happen. I mean, I think part of it is Norman Powell just came back, and he got crossed up with Reggie Jackson, and I think just the lack of experience of Norman Powell kind of just screwed them up right there, right then and there, and I think that's what happened there. But a huge moment for Minnesota right there. Obviously, Patrick Beverley, he had 7 points in this game. Felt like he had 100. He had 11 rebounds, and he had about 100 flops, I think, in this game. But, you know, his leadership to help stem the tide as it felt like Paul George was going to take over in the third quarter. He had a 17-point third quarter, 6-point lead going into the fourth. But Beverley, alongside those other dudes in Edwards and Russell, who were taking turns there in the fourth, just stemmed the tide. And then an explosion of a celebration
to end
this game. Good for them.
Of course.
I know.
I mean, you can still laugh at it, but it was amazing.
They made the playoffs.
Yeah.
Good for them. It was, I don't care. People making fun of Beverly that he threw his jersey into the crowd.
I mean, we had two guys jump up on tables.
That was awesome.
Beverly and Anthony Edwards.
Wasn't it awesome? Like, just enjoy it. Everybody enjoyed it.
Anthony Edwards wasn't sure if he should lift his shirt or not. He sort of was like, are we doing that? Are we really doing that? Patrick Beverly was just walking around like they had won the championship.
Oh,
but that's the thing with Patrick Beverly. You get all the experience. You can't pick and choose which pass you want because he had three fouls in the first quarter. So dumb that third one in particular.
Yeah.
And this is, again, like we talked about, you've got a veteran who's supposed to bring that experience and tenacity doing dumb stuff at the start of the game when they were down, but they managed to overcome that. And then you get the best of Patrick Beverley.
Yeah, they don't win this game without him.
No, of course not.
Not even close.
No.
Yeah.
But he also sort of gave the Clippers big chance there to build that lead in the first quarter. So I thought overall this was a fantastically well-managed game by Chris Finch, as Tass mentioned there. He didn't seem to panic at any point. He didn't. And I think he saw some of those offensive fouls and thought, Carl, you can't barrel through one guy. You got to wait and then just barrel through. And then he was like completely shocked in the Tim Duncan way. Like, what, that to me? How could that be a foul on me? So I think overall, you know, him being off the floor, you know, we've talked about D'Angelo Russell at times, like, taking those shots when he should be giving them to Carl. Well, when Towns is not out there, Russell's like, well, I may as well take it. He hit that huge three where he stepped into it late, which I think put them up five, I think it was there. Or maybe he's only one. Anyway,
well,
whatever
he had,
it was.
He had a couple big three-pointers in the final
did,
couple
yeah.
minutes. Yeah.
And he really stepped up the moment. And then Anthony Edwards, that dunk at the end, I think really was what like sealed it, because he got off to a great start, went a little bit slow, and then at the end came up big. So this is massive for the Minnesota Timberwolves franchise. They're through. They're safe. You know, they don't have to worry about the Grizzlies right now. Let's just enjoy this moment, because...
Well, they have, I think, the parade scheduled for later today, or maybe
it's
tomorrow.
Because
that would be amazing.
But when they were down 10 in the fourth quarter, it felt like, yep, they're going to blow it, and now they're going to have to beat either the Pelicans or the Spurs. But they instead showed incredible resilience to get this win. So very, very impressive performance by Minnesota.
Yeah, Clippers are up 10 with about 9 minutes to go, and then Karl-Anthony Towns fouls out not long after that at just 11 points, and you're looking at this going, oh my God. And D'Angelo Russell, I mean, we talked about, again, this was something we talked about going into the game. What a wild card. Because you're like, well, you're getting good Russell, you're getting bad Russell. You saw both in this game. He was garbage in the first quarter. He looked totally like afraid of the moment. It was like bad turnovers. Nothing was falling. It was like, uh-oh. And then just from there on out, really, the second, third, and fourth quarters was amazing. And you have to wonder, Trey, was the best thing to happen to the Wolves at least last night Towns fouling out?
100% it was.
I think it was.
The difference in poise between D'Angelo Russell and Anthony Edwards and Karl-Anthony Towns last night was kind of the difference. It felt like Ty Lue had an absolutely perfect game plan for when Karl-Anthony Towns was in. And then when he was out, it was like, oh, we don't have one guy just short-circuiting everything. Everybody's taking turns, making plays. I thought it was super impressive. D'Angelo Russell's told us for his entire career, I got ice in my veins. He showed it last night. Anthony Edwards, though, this is his first huge moment, completely unfazed by the moment. So if you're a Timberwolves fan, to see him step up in a game like that when you absolutely needed him was super impressive, because coming into this, you would say, all right, the Clippers, they've got a ton of experience. They've been to multiple playoff series together. They went to the conference finals together. Basically, everybody in the rotation has playoff experience at this point for him. So having a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter, the all-NBA opponent goes out. It seemed like that's the game right there.
Yeah.
But obviously it wasn't, because, you know, the Timberwolves were just able to get back on track, a large part because of Chris Finch, a large part because of Russell and Edwards, and then the crowd never let him give up. I mean, that would have been very easy to just be completely silent and be like, oh my goodness, our season is going down the drain here. We're completely blowing it. Everything that you wished wouldn't happen has happened with Towns playing the way he did, but they were able to turn it around. So that was super impressive. And I love the way that D'Angelo Russell, literally everybody else is partying. He's like, yeah, we were supposed to win this game.
Yeah,
we shouldn't have even had to play in the play-in tournament. We should have just been the seventh seed.
True.
We took care of business. He definitely did. Incredible leadership from Russell last night.
Yeah, and just enjoying the celebration, sort of the juxtaposition of Patrick Beverley going nuts. Anthony Edwards, kind of caught in the middle. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
And D'Angelo Russell, stone face. I mean, we had it all.
Yeah.
I mean, this really, for the NBA, opening night of this play-in tournament could not have gone any better.
Mm.
I mean, the refs were a little bit too much of a story. It was unfortunate we saw Joe Borgia, although his hair looking good.
I thought he'd retired, Joe Borgia. He comes out for the play-ins. He only turns up.
Big game Borgia.
Man, I tweeted it. At one point, it felt like Scott Foster and Ed Malloy were trying to one-up each other.
Wow.
I was watching them at times. Like, they were like trying to be first to the call. Like, they were like, I got this one, Ed. No, Scott, I got this one. Let me take this one. The thing is, it sort of went, like, I guess the one good thing about the bad officiating in this game is like both teams were getting like dinged for everything.
Totally.
But it was weird. At times nothing was being called, then everything was being called, and they were trying to grab some control of the game, probably because the emotions in the Target Center, and you've got Beverly and you've got some feisty guys on the Clippers too. It's a lot. I mean, I get it, but those two guys, Foster and Malloy, they just love the spotlight. That's the thing. They're like, this is my play-in
game. The double tech was hilarious. And that was when you could tell, like, you are going too crazy. crazy here because I think it was Ed Malloy, right?
It was.
It was Malloy.
And I mean, like, honestly, it was Morris and Beverly. You kind of got to do something there because they'll just start punching each other if you let it go.
I mean, it was just a touch. It was a touch. This was touch hack. Touch hack.
I mean,
like,
it was all on
times.
Beverly for sure. So, but like, I mean, first quarter, you're like, boop, that's definitely a double tech. They don't go back and review it, I don't think.
They review
style.
But Ed Malloy looked, he's like, oh man. Even Ed Malloy knew in that moment.
Oh, yeah.
A little too much Malloy right now.
Yeah, because Beverly is like,
he's waving goodbye.
I got you, man. I got you. That's your second. You're out of here.
He's waving.
And then Paul George ends up shooting a free throw. The only free throw out of that went to Paul George, which is weird. But that's where the refs, at least I think, made the right decision to not eject Morris. Even though he called it. That's we've seen sometimes where it's like you've got to be able to in the moment say, okay, that's too much. He doesn't deserve to be ejected.
Because Ed Malloy gets caught up in being Ed Malloy.
This is why as well, calling early techs when it happens in games, you can sometimes put yourself in a difficult spot because he just walked in and went straight away like Reggie let him know about it on the call.
You called double tech. All over
and then it was like a hostile act, that'll save us. And Borgia came in as well and said, Yeah. He got it right.
I think a winner in all this is Tom Washington, the third referee. I don't even know Tom Washington's name generally, but, you know, the Malloy and Foster factor really elevated the name of Tom Washington because he got in on the calls as well. I think at the beginning of the game, I know we've talked about Carl Anthony Towns and his drives to the hoop, and I called him like an elegant. He does it well, but I think, as Trey has said, it ain't that elegant. And I think the fouls on him were all – and him getting foul calls, him giving foul calls, I think you saw him flop. I mean, it just
– he was flustered, man.
It was too much. It was too much so the refs, started jumping on everything, and then they just couldn't stop. It was a snowball effect. Like, every little bump, it felt like, was a whistle in this game. But, yes, the fact that Carl Anthony Towns was a minus 14 in his minutes, and they were able to overcome that in the fourth quarter with – going against a really tiny lineup, it helped. I think the Wolves just, they were able to go at that rim, number one. They got an offensive rebound from Naz Reid for a putback, which was really, really big. So they were comfortable going at that rim. And you know, Ty Lue's taking probably a little bit of heat for not playing, whether it's Zubats or Hartenstein late. But that offense was working really well with five out for a bit. But they just... they made some mistakes down the stretch, but I think you can't underestimate the crowd and how that really helps just keep them in this game.
Yeah, and again, the crowd, like, they haven't had a lot of big games, obviously, in Minnesota over the last, 17 years, whatever it is. But Patrick Beverley is a big part of that, too. Like, you know, and even Paul George, I mean, he played with Patrick Beverley, said after the game, what Beverley is doing, he's talking about here, it's for the crowd. It gets the crowd involved. He said, Paul George, I love it. I miss it. He did it on our side because it's contagious. I think when he's in that mode, it ignites the team, it ignites the arena, and you need energy guys like that. And he is the literally the definition of an energy guy. And, he's cool. Like, people were saying last night on Twitter, it's like, he is like a wrestler. Yeah. Like, call into the crowd, like being a heel or the babyface, at least in the right arena.
Yeah. And look, it was still a 6-point game with 30 seconds to go. It's fairly safe, but it's not over. We've seen crazy stuff. And Paul George hits a three as well. Gets it back to within 4 points there. It's like, oh, Patrick Beverley, if you somehow get this to overtime and lose the game, it'll be bad for him. But that is, again, the whole Patrick Beverley experience. Because saw him talking trash to the bench and then had a huge embrace with Marcus Morris as well, literally in the same moment there. So he's like, he's talking trash but also hugging you up. And you see him stomping around the court like that. You think he's going to do something to someone here and get the wrong person. But he didn't, so... he survives.
I can't believe we've gone this long without talking about the incident that we had in this game, which was crazy because the timing of it all, too. This is in the first half. Cat picked up his fourth foul with like a little under 4 minutes to go in the half. So the Clippers are up at this point. They're up 45-38. And then about a minute later, we get a delay because a woman from the crowd has sneaked onto the court or come onto the floor during a dead ball at the one end and glued her hand, super glued her hand.
Super glue?
Well, I would assume so. Straight up Elmer's? Like elementary glue? It's got to be super glue.
I think it was Elmer's.
Yeah.
The residue that it left there, the mark. Mean, great photo from John Krasinski who got right funny. Over top. It looked white to me.
But doesn't it have to be? Okay, anyway, she glues her hand to the hardwood along the baseline. Okay, she's an animal rights protester here. this is something that happened in this game. And it's almost sort of forgotten about at this point. But the Wolves took advantage of this little pause because Russell came back. He hit two floaters, hit a three, and then, you know, they went into the break up too. Like the glue girl, glue lady, whatever you want to call her, helped oddly helped Minnesota get back in this game, which is insane.
Yeah, I mean, as Kevin Harlan was on the call, he thought someone sort of had slipped or fallen or something like that, and they were trying to help her off. That wasn't the case. And then they realized, like, she was right, or they thought she was writing something. Allie LaForce comes in and said, no, she's gluing her hand. And you're like, what?
What?
What is that? What is that?
Right. So she's, and she had something on her T-shirt, basically protesting Glenn Taylor's, from what I can tell, like, egg farm, which reportedly killed, like, 5 million
birds, chickens
because of because of a flu. They do it like ventilation shutdown and stuff like that. They're basically like just mass killing them because they have the flu. So that's what they that's what she is protesting. And I just talked about it, so I guess and
mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished there for the animal rights protest. But insane incident.
So you're saying Reggie was wrong when he said that she was writing Baconator on the floor.
Oh, that was a little weird.
She was probably writing Baconator on the floor.
That was strange.
All I could think when I saw this was next pick and payoff. Somebody's got to glue their hand to the table for a whole show.
I mean,
it's not very exciting,
though,
but it'd be very funny to have your hand glued to the table for an hour and a half.
Yeah. Any other notes about this game or any other players that the Wolves had? I mean, like, look, we talked up Anthony Edwards, D'Angelo Russell. I'm glad you brought in Naz Reid. I thought he played really well down the stretch there.
Yeah.
And big shots, like you said, from some of these other guys. Anything else, Lee?
Well, only Naz Reid did finish plus 17. And I thought he realized, like, he was their last big remaining. He just had to compete and contest and keep some balls alive. And I thought he did a decent job of that. Like, his box score is certainly not going to blow you away, but his presence was there and it was felt.
And he's played great all season.
He has. He's been a very good player for them. And Chris Finch, I mean, he did play eight guys, which is important, I think. I mean, we talk a lot that you got to tighten your rotation, but he got 20-plus minutes out of three guys off the bench, and that's going to be important. They're now going against the Grizzlies. It's going to be a good series. I'm looking forward to it because Grizzlies are probably going to be – well, they are the favorite, but I expect this one to be a pretty – you know, this is going to be a battle, I think. Should be fun.
What's the over-under on the number of
techs,
I guess, in this series? Let's talk a little bit. Just first thoughts on Wolves-Grizzlies. Game one in Memphis on Saturday afternoon. Yeah, what do you set the line at? Because we have Beverly and Beverly versus Ja Morant. You know he's going to get a lot of that matchup. I mean, Dylan Brooks going to be in this. Anthony Edwards, maybe Russell. Like, like he's sort of Patrick Beverly light in some regards. It's going to be nuts this one.
Yeah.
And then both crowds are going to be amazing. It's going to be wild.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if Patrick Beverley can show any sort of control, though, because if he does get into these things where he's getting tech fouls early and maybe getting fouls, it didn't cost him in the end last night, but it certainly could in another game. And so, you know, this is a series. It's not win or go home in this sense like it was there last night. But you know he's going to want that Ja Morant battle, that matchup. It's just whether or not he can actually show any sort of control. Because I thought that was the thing. I was going back to what we said in the first quarter. You want a veteran to at least know there's a line somewhere, certainly early on in the game, you know. And he can't seem to do that. So that may be something that the Grizzlies try to also exploit. Like, someone get – Dylan Brooks is a – get under Patrick Beverley's skin.
Yeah.
Get him in foul trouble. Get tech fouls on him. Get him off the sort of floor if you can, because then that takes away their most tenacious defender of Ja Morant. But Grizzlies, you know, they're going to spread the floor. They've got three-point shooters. They're not going to – it's not like they rely solely on Ja Morant. They've played very, very well without him. So even if he is taken out of the game somewhat – the Grizzlies are going to feel pretty good still.
But you think this is going to be a competitive series?
I think so, yeah. I don't see a sweep or anything like that. I think it's going to be pretty tight.
You agree with that?
I can't wait. I think there's going to be lots of extracurriculars, obviously. Yeah. The last time that they played, it was in Memphis. Ja Morant's dad, Ja Jackin, with D'Angelo Russell. And D'Angelo Russell and Anthony Edwards, they have got an advantage, I think, on the perimeter. You know, Ja's got to guard somebody. And then it's, you know, Desmond Bane or Dylan Brooks out there. I think those two dudes, and it showed in their last game, D'Angelo Russell had 37 points and 8 assists and was able to end this game. It was a lot like what happened with the Clippers. Mm-hmm. Karl Anthony Towns did not have a good game, and D'Angelo Russell was able to just be him. So I know we sort of ride this D'Angelo Russell roller coaster, but I don't know, the way he was so calm. Yeah. I think the Wolves have got to feel good going in along with Anthony Edwards beside him. those two dudes, along with, yeah, a resilient bunch, and Karl-Anthony Towns has to play a heck of a lot better, I think.
Oh, big time.
I think we're sitting here.
Does he have to have, like, a really, like, at least solid game one to you? And will he? Because he probably won't be going up against, like, a really small mobile forward, like we saw with the Clippers and what Ty Lue did. It will be,
Steven Adams.
Yeah, Steven Adams.
Guarding him one-on-one.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just has to. I can't believe they won this game. When it comes down to him scoring 11 points, being a minus 14
playing
out there.
25 minutes. Whatever.
Yeah, and really, besides Anthony Edwards and D'Angelo Russell, not incredible performances from basically anybody else. I mean, they had one other guy in double digits in Malik Beasley. So I think the Wolves have to feel really, really good. Obviously, the Grizzlies feel incredibly great as well, I think it does help. Yeah, Timberwolves going up against a Grizzlies team that does play a center.
Yeah,
that helps.
First thoughts on Grizz Wolves here as we get ready on Saturday.
This is the sicko series here.
Yeah,
it probably will weirdly be on NBA TV since it is the Memphis Grizzlies and the Minnesota Timberwolves. But both of these teams were kind of everybody's second favorite team for a big chunk of this season. They both talk a lot of trash, so keeping emotions in check is going to be huge. Beverly is able to play with that edge, as we saw last night. He had a bad first half, but he contributed in the second half. Mm-hmm. Towns wasn't able to play with that edge. He was being a Patrick Beverly out there, but he was just never able to get back on track and be able to contribute to a winning cause there. So, I mean, I think it goes the other way for the Grizzlies as well. You know that Patrick Beverly's going to try something with Ja Morant. And when that happens, like, Steven Adams needs to step in and be like, it's over. We're not having an actual fight here because I'm Steven Adams. And I think that that's an advantage for the Grizzlies because both of these teams play with a ton of edge and a ton of physicality. Yeah. So whoever's able to keep their heads is probably going to be at a little bit of an advantage here. And I mean, if you're the Wolves, you have to feel like we've got a little bit of momentum. You know, the Grizzlies are going to be getting back their all-NBA guy in Ja Morant, which will throw a wrench into things, just having to adjust to playing that style once again. Whereas the Timberwolves are coming off an unexpected win, though they kind of expected it. They're still, they got to be riding a high a little bit here. So I wouldn't be totally surprised to see Minnesota take game one.
Yeah, the officiating, I think, is going to be huge in this series, too, just in the sense, like, these teams are chatty. They play aggressive. Like, they're going to get up under you. And what will those three officials on that given night allow and try and, like, nip in the bud early or let them play because it's a playoff series? You know, it's going to have an impact for sure. It won't be the last time, I think, that we're talking about officials, unfortunately.
What's the over-under on how many guys Steven Adams will lift off the ground in this series? Yeah. 3.5, I would say.
At one time?
Possibly.
We were there in person when Tony Bradley of the Chicago Bulls got into the face of Ja Morant, so Steven Adams had to take him away.
Walked him back to Chicago.
I know.
If he hugs Patrick Beverly, it's not going to end well.
No, not like a toddler at the at a playground, and the parents like, "Come on, we got to go." Put him over the shoulder.
We're going down to the Fortress tonight. Tickets have been secured. We're going to go watch the Hornets Hawks. But I got to be honest. As soon as I saw the Wolves wrap up this victory, I was like, do we make the trip back to Memphis for some Timberwolves Grizzlies action? Probably not going to happen, for games one or two, but if the series goes to a game five, game seven, I'm just saying. Later in the show, too, because the Wolves are in the playoffs, Trey is going to bless us with his rendition of, the Werewolves of London, but the Timberwolves of Minnesota.
Yeah, unfortunately, my electric guitar pulling a little bit of a Karl-Anthony Towns this morning.
Oh, no.
Completely broke down. But luckily, JD came through with an acoustic, so stick around a little bit later.
We get our lighters out, baby.
Yeah, exactly. Fans.
Okay, great. We got to talk about the other game from last night. The Nets defeat the Cavs 115-108. Cleveland stuck around, Lee. They made a game of it, but where do you want to start with?
Well, again, if you look at the box score of this, Cleveland won three quarters of this game, but they got themselves in such a hole in that first quarter.
40-20.
Exactly, and they were kind of digging themselves out, and they didn't have that margin for error in this game, I thought. They had to be pretty much perfect because we found out just before the game Jared Allen wasn't going to be playing, which was going to hurt. We sort of thought he probably wouldn't, but it was confirmed that he wasn't going to play. So that hurt their depth and their size inside. And then they withstood an almost perfect night from Kyrie Irving, who was just on fire shooting the ball. And then Kevin Durant, I actually think Kevin Durant was the player of the game because he was just so controlled. He hit the huge three late. He hit a couple of those mid-ranges as well.
Oh, those 16-foot jumpers in your eye. What
exactly.
Are you gonna do?
Just as the Cavs had a chance to get this to within a possession or two. I think they got it down to 5, in fact, in that fourth quarter. But you could just see the difference is, hey, who's on your team? Is it Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving? No, it's other guys like a Caris LeVert. Darius Garland was good. Markkanen hit a couple of shots in the fourth, but he wasn't doing a whole lot outside of that. And then defensively, you saw Bruce Brown and Nick Claxton just throwing some easy lobs there at the end, which just gave...
Because there's so much attention put on Kyrie and KD that it at times felt like it was Bruce Brown and Nick Claxton playing one other Cavs player. Yeah. There's just so much more to room on. And credit to Bruce Brown. He basically was Draymond Green in that game.
He was. He was smart enough to realize, like, there's the advantage. And I think early on as well, you saw, like, in a playoff-style game, you saw intensity on the defensive end from the Brooklyn Nets. We've questioned their vulnerability at that end. Kevin Durant blocking shots, contesting shots, just making it, not giving up any easy baskets. They were crashing the boards a little bit more. And I think that you saw Evan Mobley and, again, Markkanen not quite physically engaged at that end. It was more, they were sort of overpowered a little bit, so that wasn't good. But in that second quarter, after the initial first burst, that 40-20 quarter in the first quarter, Cleveland had a real opportunity in the second quarter. Brooklyn couldn't score. They had 8 points through about 8 minutes. They had 7 turnovers as well. Yeah. Everyone was stepping on the line. Like, four guys stepped on the line last night.
It was wild. Yeah. Back-to-back possessions. Yeah. Curry and Mills stepping on the sidelines. And then, Drummond like a minute later.
And then someone for Cleveland. I think it was Garland as well did for Cleveland. So they had their chances here, but they just didn't. They lacked that sort of quality finish. And I think that was the real difference here. Kevin Durant, as we mentioned, he came down and said, all right, I'll just hit these mid-rangers just to keep us ahead, a couple of possessions, and that was enough. So I thought overall a decent performance from Cleveland, bad start. They made up for it, but they just couldn't get over the line. And you just saw Kevin Durant, playoff Kevin Durant is just an incredible species. And if Kyrie Irving can play like he did last night, then this is going to be an incredible series against the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, 2-7 matchup, Boston and Brooklyn. The Cavs, Tass, your boys, you know, a crazy season. They fought. They did get back into it. And they have one more chance. They're obviously going to be taking on the winner of tonight's Hornets-Hawks game. But what'd you think of this one?
And you said the other day, maybe Jared Allen is waiting for this second game at a play-in tournament.
Look, I have no intel on this.
Yeah.
If I'm a betting man, I think he plays.
Yeah, I think so,
I think he plays on Friday night. He was warming up in the background. They went to Greenberg, obviously, for like his hit from the floor back to the studio. And you saw Jared Allen back there, you know, with the ball in his hands.
From
and
Jared to Jared.
I mean, it's his non-shooting hand. I mean, he's tough. He's going to play.
He should play.
I thought he was going to play in this game because I got fooled by the footage, you know, watching it from my couch as well. Yeah, it is strange. It's his offhand. He said it's the defensive end where it's the problem that he could injure his hand. Yeah, it's strange. It's strange. But maybe he is waiting for the second game of the play-in tournament where if they are playing at home and they're the favorite, whoever they play, the Hawks or the Hornets, because they showed that they are a resilient bunch. They made some mistakes in that first quarter. To go down 40-20 just really, really hurt. I think they got a little too cute with the defense at times. They switched from a zone to a man-to-man within the same possession, and then they got a Bruce Brown 3 in their eye because of it. But the Nets just, they showed up. And they really showed up with that D in the first quarter. Kevin Durant didn't take a shot until the 7:30 mark of that first quarter. He said his friends don't know that he's a playmaker. And he proved it to them.
Hang on a minute. So his best skill is not scoring.
It's a real LeBron in the reverse. That's the exact reverse. He said coming into this game, I've been making plays, been setting guys up for years. Even my buddies don't know. And
even my buddies don't know is a great way to put it.
Yeah. Hey, listen. 11 assists in this game, but closed it out, awesome. Obviously. He took a backseat and. It's an amazing thing just to watch Drummond and Bruce Brown to start this game. They were the guys making plays.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, Kyrie started in his flow. And then the second quarter where I'm sure they were saying to Ben Simmons, look, you could be out there right here, right now, leading this second unit at least, maybe. That's a real, real tough task to ask him. But, yeah, that second quarter stint where the Cavs were able to get back in this game and they couldn't score – it was Dragic and Kyrie Irving in the backcourt. Ben Simmons could be big. if he could play those minutes, and we'll get to the Boston Celtics breakdown, he could be even bigger on the defensive end. That's where they're going to need him. But yeah, it's just such a huge hole for the Cavs to get down. And the Nets were destroying them offensively, 59% to 35% in that first half, 6 blocks to 2 blocks. You don't think of the Nets as blocking shots much, but yeah, Kevin Durant really bringing that huge block of Markkanen.
Oh, yeah.
It just shows.
Awesome, and then he blocked Garland, yeah. And I think both of those blocks led to points in transition for the Nets, too. So it was, not only did you stop them on one end, it just led to a basket on the other end. He was amazing. He played great. You're right. Kyrie went, what did he start? 9 for 9?
Yeah.
12-15 overall. 10 for 10, I mean, they hit.
Oh, 9 for 9 in the first half.
9 for 9 in the first half, that's right. And then 10 for 10. And he hit that shot at the end of the first half where it was like, he received the ball at half with like 4 seconds to go. He got doubled. Caris LeVert, a soft double from Mobley, and then hits like this fadeaway jumper in front of his own bench and just like ran to the locker room. It was just one of those nights where it's like every shot he's taking is going in. Like, he was hitting tough shots. So what do you do? But are the Celtics looking at this trade going, okay, it's Kyrie and KD, and then Bruce Brown did have a good game, but I think they'll be happy if he's trying to replicate triple doubles for the rest of the series.
Yeah, 34-12 for Kyrie, 25-11 for KD, 18-9-8 for Bruce Brown, and the Nets won by 7. Like, if you're the Celtics, you're thinking, all right, we don't have Robert Williams. Bruce Brown called that out, and Kevin Durant said, shut up, man. I guess it's the caffeine talking. I thought that was a pretty funny
caffeine
way of putting
courage?
It.
Was that
no, the... caffeine pride talking.
Caffeine pride.
Yeah. Never heard that. No.
Yeah, Bruce Brown finishes playing a basketball game and just has, a Coke?
Something.
So I thought that was weird, but we've seen... recently, great games from Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, and the Nets still lose.
Yep.
They played incredibly well last night. The Cavs did a great job to stay close and to keep it close, but I didn't feel like the Nets were threatened there. They're going to be threatened against the Celtics. It's like, you scored how many points last night against the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are fine, 115 points. Are you going to be able to stop the Celtics from scoring more than 115? I don't know. So at the very least, it was like great win for the Nets, incredible performances from their stars. They got good performances as well from their role guys, like Drummond had a good game, Claxton had a good game. They might have shot threes incredibly well, but they had three other role players really step up, and they squeaked this one out. So if you're the Celtics, you're thinking, long-term, our depth is going to win out in the series as long as we don't get beat by, 100 combined points from their two best players.
Nick Claxton hitting jump shots is that's found money for the Brooklyn Nets. It was the end of the quarter or whatever, but still, I thought he was good. But if you're the Celtics, Marcus Smart's probably going to be first job on Kyrie Irving. You got Derek White who can come out there. Jaylen Brown's probably going to get a go. And then obviously Jason Tatum's probably going to start on Kevin Durant, I would think. The Nets have the best player in Kevin Durant in this series, but I think the depth and the amount of different guys and those flexible, switchy, long arm guys are going to make it offensively way more challenging for Kyrie in this series than he saw last night against Brooklyn.
Yeah, the scary part for me if I'm the Brooklyn Nets is, who does Curry and Kyrie guard in the fourth quarter? They're just tiny. One of them can sort of hide on Marcus Smart.
Yep.
The other one has nowhere to hide. And I think you saw in the fourth quarter of this game, Caris LeVert was going at Kyrie Irving. They continuously went at Kyrie on several possessions, but that's going to be Jaylen Brown in the next series. I think that's the big worrisome part. You play Curry, Kyrie. Sometimes you play Patty Mills. I think that's Jaylen Brown's going to have a big series, I think. I think that's where they miss Ben Simmons big time. At the end of this game, Kyrie, Curry are going to be on the floor. Maybe Patty Mills is going to be on the floor. Who do they guard? So it's a combination of Smart and freaking Jaylen Brown. So that's the scary part, I think. And even Durant's got to guard Tatum, probably. That's his only matchup, and that's fine. But who else do they throw on Tatum when they want to give Durant a little bit of...
Bruce Brown, probably.
Yeah, and Tatum just shoots over him, probably. Yeah. Or they throw Kessler Edwards, the guy who had a very, very tough game in this one.
He's not going to be playing very much in this next series. He did not look ready.
They dropped James Johnson. They just dropped James Johnson, who was a good defensive player for Kessler Edwards. I just thinking about a guy that they're going to put on Tatum. It's Durant, and that's it. And he's just got to play a ton, I guess, because Kessler Edwards is not a great option. But I think the Celtics just caused them so many problems defensively. I think Jaylen Brown could have a monstrous series against the Kyrie Curry Mills backcourt.
And they're going to miss Robert Williams, but Horford there, we just know defensively is way smarter than we give him credit for. Like he always knows the right position to be in. Him and Andre Drummond, that's Andre Drummond's not going to cook him inside or anything like that. So many advantages I think go in Boston's way in this series.
Any other random notes just from Nets Cavs before we move on? We didn't have somebody gluing themselves.
No glue.
What else did you have?
The Cavs need to start Kevin Love on Friday. Markkanen, he ain't cutting it. Kevin Love completely changed the game for the Cavs. That's why they came back in the second quarter. He was playing the hardest of anybody out there. He was drawing two guys like on the glass. They had to send two guys to box him out. He tried to dunk on Nick Claxton. Yeah. Like, Kevin Love, has he dunked in the past three seasons? He
was trying to checked, throw down. I actually checked. How many dunks does Kevin Love have this season? Surprisingly, he had five.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Okay. I don't think they're on anybody.
Yeah.
But, Markkanen, he had a better second half, I thought. You know, he at least scored in transition. But I thought that was crazy that J.B. Bickerstaff had him guarding Kevin Durant. Like,
he poked it from him a couple times.
Who cares? Who cares?
That was wild.
If you're on offense, you want Lauri Markkanen guarding your ball handler. And Bickerstaff was just running him out there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Kevin Durant. Nobody's going to stop him, but Markkanen was bad.
Yeah.
Markkanen was really bad. He just played incredibly soft.
Yeah, he did. He hit the big three late, and he had another. I had a dunk inside, but that was sort of overall his game. He was just out of his depth, I thought, there. They need him to be better because I think he can be better. I mean, he's a stretchy guy who can spread the floor a little bit there, but it wasn't good enough early on.
I mean, look. They need Jared Allen to play. I think we'd all agree with that in this Friday game. That would help. Even if he's limited, he's going to help. Okoro's got to do something. Jetty Osmond's got to do something. I mean, because Garland had a monster game. He played great. I loved when he rattled home the three and was dapping up people in the front row. Mobley, for a rook, you know, shooting 9 of 13. Like, he had 19 and 7. I feel like he would have, like... There was a lot of times in the game I forgot he was out there, I guess, if that makes sense.
But still,
it's not like he had a bad game. But, the guys that you were saying, like Markkanen, and I'm with you. It was incredibly Love and Rondo there at the second quarter that was, like, trying to get them back in the game and at least close the gap a little bit. But do you like their chances against either the Hornets or Hawks? I know it's tough to say because they don't know where they're playing yet.
Yeah,
but
again, you're at home, so I think, as we've seen, that's a big advantage. They should feel confident because both of these teams, Atlanta and Charlotte, have their vulnerabilities and weaknesses defensively. But having said that, it's open. It's absolutely open for all three of these teams. If it goes, falls their way, whoever goes to Cleveland on Friday night, we've got to feel like this is a winnable game too.
A few other notes I have. I think, JD, you have a photo. Ben Simmons maybe is coming back to play Boston. He was wearing that Celtics green last night there. And I guess it's not leather, according to Jared Greenberg. It's lamb.
Well, you're not going to believe this, Skeets. They can make leather out of lambskin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's leather. Lambskin
lamb.
Leather.
Yeah, there it is. So, I got the Celtics green there and got a couple shots of him. What do you think, Lee?
I also think that wouldn't be all that comfortable sitting around a lot of sweaty guys. to me, it's not that breathable, so it might be a little bit sticky there. But
well, there are reports that Simmons in practice is walking around like he's Michael Jordan.
and the Nets put up a video of him knocking in shots the other day.
Yeah.
Like, hide that. Don't put that stuff out. All that's going to do. No, they shouldn't be doing that.
He's
coming back.
You
shouldn't be doing it because we've never seen him miss a social media shot ever. But we know that the whole reason he's in this position is because of things that happen in the playoffs where he wouldn't shoot. So don't put that out there. And him walking around like Jordan, like, what?
In his defense, I don't think he's walking around going, look at me, I'm walking around like Michael Jordan. Some report is saying
that. But it's just dumb.
Like fist pumping all the time. Chewing gum.
Cigar, that's got the bat.
You want to be like that guy who's like, man, at practices, no one can get near me at practice.
Right.
I don't play. Yeah, I just practice. Weird stuff.
What is that report?
I don't know.
From Scoop B.
Yeah.
The guy is literally playing 1-on-0.
Yeah.
He's not practicing.
Yeah.
He's just around the hoop putting the ball up. He's not sprinting. He's not ready to play.
He's walking around.
He's walking
walking around
the bravado of Michael Jordan. It's just what?
That notoriously ultra uncompetitive person who always liked to put in his best efforts at practice and not in games.
I mean. Well, speaking of Jordan there in the 90s and his fame, I got a real kick out of Tommy Heitz, who we know because we worked with at Turner Sports, is one of the producers on the broadcast. And they named it Tommy Heitz's 91-92 Nuggets Media Guide, which was showing Bernie Bickerstaff and Winston Garland. I just laughed out loud. It was like a real Lee Ellis.
Yeah.
Tommy Heitz as Lee Ellis got the old media guy. Oh, Bickerstaff and Garland. Yeah, here. Yeah. Here's the connection.
I've got a Hoop magazine with a heading. Bernie Bickerstaff has Sonics booming when he was coaching them. And Winston Garland, I remember from one of the very first playoff games I ever saw, Jazz Warriors, big upset, the 7 Warriors over the Jazz. Winston Garland played. This is before the Run TMC days.
There you go.
He was their last point guard before Tim Hardaway. So
that's why Heitz puts that on the broadcast for someone like you out there.
Exactly. You see that little moustache, the little dad moustache from the 80s that everyone seemed to have?
Yep.
It was awesome to see. Yep. So I'm surprised. Winston Garland, I mean, Darius is what, only 20... something, so he must have been an older father. But then I was too. I was 35, so maybe it's no different.
Sure.
Well, you'll see him on Friday night because he attends the game.
So awesome.
He'll be there. I'm sure they got to go back to this graphic. I don't know if TNT has the game on Friday.
I don't know if they do, actually. Yeah, I don't think. I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
Jay-Z, I love the stank face reaction. We had a couple great Jay-Z reactions, actually. So good stuff there.
Reminded me of that one of LeBron that time. Remember with, I think Beyonce was there too, where Jay-Z was like really looking down the court that time.
Where he hit like a fadeaway. And I just, my final note is, we always do this with like Steph Curry, like one game. Just let Steph Curry shoot every single time, which would be fun to see. I'd love to see it with Kevin Durant, too.
Because, he's a passer. He's a passer.
Oh, he's a passer. Yeah, but
Kyrie would
you saw as he took over there at the end, he's like, I'll hit these jumpers and we'll end this game. It's just like, he's unguardable. I would love to see him come down every time and just shoot the 16 to three-pointer shot wherever he wants to on the floor because it's not being stopped. And how many points could he accumulate? It'd be fun to see.
Could he go for 100? Yeah, that's the question. Geez, he could easily. I thought it was hilarious in the first quarter. You know, it was basically Bruce Brown and Andre Drummond were scoring for the whole first half of the quarter. And Van Gundy's on the call. He's like, Cavs are doing a great job holding Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. They haven't taken a shot yet. And then the next thing you know, they were 9 for 9 at the end of the first quarter. You're like, ooh, yeah, it's probably bad news when you're losing and the two stars haven't even gotten heated up yet. But, man. Kevin Durant felt like he was playing at about 75% capacity last night, and he completely dominated the game every moment he was out there. Great stuff.
Yeah, I think the closest we've seen to Kevin Durant taking every shot was Game 7 last year against the Bucks. I mean, they just gave him the ball over and over. He played 53 minutes that game. He only scored,
Didn't he have 49 monster? Shots or something like that?
Was
that
so what it
Did
was?
Did he have that many?
No.
That
seems, no.
I don't remember, but it was a lot. And I just mean
36 shots.
I want to see him do it against like the Thunder in early April, late March, just for fun. I'd love to see Curry try it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anything else from this game or Celtics Nets or Cavs versus the winner of tonight's Hornet Hawks?
Just found out Brad Rollin on Twitter tonight's game sellout.
Good thing we got our ticks.
I know.
Already talked to our guy Larry.
Oh, yeah.
He's got seats.
Oh, yeah.
I said, you know where we'll be.
Yeah, yeah.
You know standing. We're standing. Yeah. You know our corner where we're parked.
We're the seventh.
He's swinging by. Oh, no, don't
Hawks
you worry.
Bros, going on. Yeah.
Oh, he's bringing the entire Hawksboro section to us. So I can't wait for tonight's tape. 7 o'clock start, too, isn't it?
Yeah, great. Perfect.
What time are you going to get there? You always early. He's early. We didn't get our spot. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Box out.
Standing
box
room
out,
rules are first in. First in. You got to stand there and just can't move. So
Lee, we need you tonight. I need you there 6:15.
Yeah.
You know, bring some rope.
Well, okay. Someone else
beer.
Is on beer duty.
I'll buy beers.
We got to be very when we go into the toilets as well. We got to make sure someone's really holding our place there because people will poach our spot.
For sure. All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll get into Bucks, Bulls, Sixers, Raptors, and a whole lot more. Don't go anywhere.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone?
Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
There are so many things I wish we could have both ways. For example, a zero-calorie cheeseburger. How about red wine without the headache? A dog that never poops. That'd be heaven. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. I'm sorry, Don Draper. This is 2024. I want to look good and feel comfortable. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a little bit of everything. The air-knit boxer briefs are so good. The Ace sweatpant, mad comfy, but also great tailored fit. And because this is the summer of Henleys, yeah, I'm calling it, it's the summer of Henleys, you know I threw a few of them in my virtual shopping cart. Peacocking is for the birds, baby! Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. They're not flashy, just classic. Sort of like a No Dunks podcast. Always in style, always crazy comfortable. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code NODUNKS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code NODUNKS. All right, back with No Dunks here in the Classic Factory. JD, I loved how you timed this, your return from vacation. You know, first day back here in the factory talking about great playing games. Well done, sir. I was skeptical at first. Cutting it too close, JD, in my mind. Nope. You nailed it. Energy's high in the Classic Factory.
You better believe it.
Yeah. Doing big numbers here today, too. So if you're new to No Dunks on YouTube, help us out. Like the video and subscribe. We do this every weekday. And who knows, maybe on the play, maybe on the weekends, sometimes, I don't know.
Just checking it out. I think that's why JD actually timed it this way, because there was some talk about maybe some evening post-play-in, but he didn't show up after the first play-in, just to make sure we didn't do it that way.
So yes,
I kid.
Like, subscribe to No Dunks, really help us out. Okay, we've talked about the two play-in games from last night. Let's get to some of the Eastern Conference series. We touched on them briefly earlier in the week, but let's preview them and make our predictions. Game one, Bucks Bulls, baby. I never know what to say. Do you say Bucks Bulls or Bulls Bucks? Do you put the higher seed first or the seed that's the visiting team first? I go back and forth.
Yeah, I'm with you, Skeets. I sent a tweet today about the Bucks Bulls, and I put Bucks Bulls. You know, if you're talking about an individual game, you would say Bulls Bucks.
Right.
Road team first. But I think you got to give the honor to the team that earned the better seed
right.
When you're talking about the playoffs.
I think here. You're right. Yeah. It's Bucks Bulls. Game one this Sunday, April 17th, 6:30 p.m. Eastern start there in Milwaukee. Let me just set you up here. Bucks won a perfect 4-0 against Chicago during the regular season. Giannis has not lost to Chicago in a very, very long time. Two of the games, though, this year decided by single digits, the other two blowouts. So we'll see if we get a more competitive series. Can't wait to hear Trey's thoughts. And Bucks, third in offense, 14th defense on the year. I probably have that wrong. Actually, scratch that. I forgot to update something, so don't worry about that part. But Trey, is this going to be more competitive, or could this be brooms for Milwaukee?
Say it ain't so, Skeets. Say it ain't so. No brooms, por favor. Key to this series and the potential X factor are one and the same. Can the Chicago Bulls discover time travel and go back to 2015 when they could actually beat Giannis Antetokounmpo in the playoffs? There were not a lot of good matchups for the Bulls once they dropped down into the 5-6 sort of zone. This one is particularly bad. Like you mentioned, Skeets, Bulls haven't beat a Giannis Bucks team since December 26th, 2017. That's 13 straight games. So it seems a pretty tall task to beat them 4 times out of 7.
Yeah.
I do think the Bulls can steal one game if everything goes perfectly according to plan. The Bucks, first of all, have to go cold from three-point land. They had 16 games this season where they shot 30% or lower. They went just 6-10 in those games. Of course, one of those was against the Bulls, which the Bucks won. The second is that Patrick Williams has to hold up a little bit against Giannis, and that's kind of a silver lining for Bulls fans, as they actually get to see what Patrick Williams looks like going against Giannis, since theoretically he's going to be the guy that will guard him for the next 4 or 5 seasons. So it'll be cool to see if he has any sort of chance. I'm not super optimistic. And third, DeMar DeRozan really has to control the game and be on fire and then just go off in the fourth quarter. Basically, the Bulls are going to have to outshoot the Bucks and hope that that DeMar is the best player in the fourth quarter and that he outshoots Chris Middleton, most likely. So my head says Bucks in 5. My heart says Bulls in 6.
No, so if there's no sweep, maybe we get, you said say it ain't so. Say it ain't so. Weezer performance? Since we're getting the Werewolves of London performance?
Oh, if the Bulls win, we get to hear you play Weezer.
A whole series?
Yeah.
Okay.
You got to do the whole album.
Sounds good.
Good. I'm in it. In for it. I can be backup something. Backup vocals. Listen, I think the analysis on this series, I don't want to be simple, but I just don't believe the Bulls being gritty enough to beat the Bucks. The 50-50 balls, I think, are going to be like 90-10 balls, because the Bucks, that's what they do. I mean, they put it up on the glass. Even if they miss, we saw what they did in the postseason last year, and they would get extra possessions. Even if they don't shoot all that well, they're going to get extra possessions against the Bulls, who are a good defensive rebounding team. They are. But I think in the postseason, the second chance points, which the Bulls didn't allow, are probably not going to happen, because they just haven't had a really good defensive performance in a while. One of the last ones, going back and reading about the Bucks and the Bulls series, was for their whole season, was probably against the Bucks in like late January, January 21st. There was the Grayson Allen game. That was probably one of their better defensive performances of the last 2.5 months. So I just don't believe them in being tough enough. Now, I think DeRozan, as he said, he's got to go off. But Jrue Holiday for a series against DeRozan is going to be a problem. Jrue Holiday is going to be his guy. And DeRozan, his first playoff performance with the Bulls, looking forward to that. But we know his numbers aren't as good as they are in the regular season. Traditionally, going back, actually he had a good series against the Nuggets with the Spurs in his last postseason performance. But, going back to his Raptors days, I don't know, his numbers aren't going to go up, and I think you need the Bulls' offense to be better, because I just don't think they're going to be able to stop the Bucks all that well. I think their scoring has to be high. This is LaVine's first postseason. He's not 100%. He's sort of been up and down the last month. With no Lonzo Ball, the Bulls are going to have to outscore the Bucks. I say 5. Okay. I say 5 for the Bucks.
So, Lee, keys to this series or potential X factors? I mean, I think a part of it that sucks is we'd be more excited for this series, hypothetically, if the Bulls hadn't played like one of the worst teams over the last stretch of the regular season. They were bad, very bad.
And one of those problems is Vucci inside is just not big enough. Now he's probably going to have Brook and Giannis there sort of just bouncing him out of the way there, and that's going to be a problem. I mean,
Baby's got to prove that all-NBA ninth team selection.
He's big enough. He just doesn't play.
But the thing is, Brook
like
Lopez is
enough.
Just like a gigantic human being. And then Giannis will just like, get out of my way, I'm dunking here. Now, Vucci, offensively, he can stretch him out a little bit. If he can hit that mid-ranger and step it out and hit some threes, keep the offense going there, he can at least counter what he's perhaps giving up at the other end. I think, though, for Chicago, I mean, Alex Caruso, I think he has to have a huge series on a Middleton or a Jrue Holiday, someone like that. He's been really good when he's played for them, giving them some good energy. But it just feels like they just don't have enough to be able to really compete. I mean, Chris Middleton, love him or hate him, whatever you feel, he has performed in the playoffs. He was fantastic when Giannis went down last year against the Atlanta Hawks. He was obviously very good for most of the series against the Phoenix Suns. And Jrue Holiday is just he's just one of the most composed, calm players on both ends of the floor. You know he can get a defensive stop, and you're very comfortable with Jrue Holiday having the ball in his hand late if the game is close. But ultimately, it comes down to Giannis. Like, what can the Bulls possibly do to slow Giannis down, other than hoping he misses? But as we've seen, Giannis is playing for 48 minutes, even if the Bulls are having a really good game. So it's going to be tough. I do think the Bulls, I think it's very hard to sweep teams in these 4 games, out of best out of 7 series. So I think the Bulls get one. I think they get one at home, but it's probably more. It might be their gentleman sweep, though.
You think so? We're not getting a douchebag sweep.
Douchebag
sweep is when the underdog, or really any team, wins the first game.
Yes.
But then you lose the next four. That's the douchebag part, because it's like, they almost gave it to you at the beginning. Real douchebags. Yeah. Get your hopes up, then kill you. The gentleman sweep, what we consider a gentleman sweep, is we take, you know, three our team games, takes the first three games. And as a gentleman, we offer you. Usually it's at home. It's in your arena. Here is the fourth game.
We're going home anyway.
Yeah, like, and we'll take care of it in five. Okay, so there. But you think it's gentleman sweep possibly.
That's where I think it is. Yeah. I mean, look, I think if it's close, DeRozan has shown us this season that he can get the Bulls over the line. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But they have to get it close enough for DeRozan to be able to execute, and that's where I think it's going to be tough.
It feels like in you guys setting up this series, like so many things have to go perfectly for the Bulls. Good DeRozan, good LaVine, Caruso's got to get back to his dominant defensive ways. Vucci's got to hit threes and do work inside. It's like all of this stuff, in theory, you add it up, the Bulls could win a game or two, but you need everything to align. Whereas the Bucks, like, I mean, they'll be able to win games even if Middleton and the Ferris wheel is down one,
right?
Because of Giannis and Drew and stuff like that, and their role players, and they've just been through these wars before, so they're not going to be phased at all.
It'd be interesting to see how the Grayson Allen, Alex Caruso thing goes, because I think it's evened up, and in fact it's gone the other way now. I think the Bulls are ahead in that series, but what happens now? Does that become a factor? You know, does it become a bit of an eye for an eye series? Is it going to get some physical stuff, some flagrants and things like that? Because I think it's got the potential for it, and that could help Chicago for sure if it does get a little bit scrappy like that.
Anything else with this one? So you're Bucks in five. Trey's, you know, he's a Bulls fan.
Bulls in six.
He's Bulls in six.
I mean, they're not going to beat the Bucks at home in game seven. But
this is a real Brandon Jennings Bucks in
exactly.
Bulls in six. Yeah,
exactly.
Flipping
it on its
head. Yeah. Okay, and you're also saying you're calling the gentleman sweep. You're saying Bucks in five. I'm going to go Bucks in five as well. I will say the Bulls take game three though to really get our
so
guy
excited.
So what's
that one? Well, no,
that's just nothing.
But you did do a whole breakdown.
I don't know. The game three win. Yeah. I forget what that one would be called. I'll be there, though.
You're going to go for that one?
Yeah.
Oh, then they're dead. Lock it in.
Friday night.
Awesome.
Took forever to finally announce it, but Friday night.
Nice.
The 20, whatever that is.
What's okay, so you're 29th. Are we going to have you on the Drop podcast and you're flying after the show?
22nd.
Oh, 22nd. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. I booked my flight a couple of days ago, and I booked it for Thursday in the middle of the day because I didn't know when they hadn't announced the games yet. I was like, it's going to be Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. I'll be home for all of them. Game three. Catch me wilding out.
Oh, nice.
I just guilted my buddy Adam. He was like, I got a school. He told me, he's like, if you fly home, I'll go to the game with you. I'm like, cool. That's awesome. I booked my ticket. He said, awesome. I'm in. Then today I said, all right, game's on Friday. He said, oh, I committed to a thing at school.
Oh, no.
And I never break my commitments. I said, you committed to me too. Mm-hmm. So he broke his commitment at school. Shout out to my guy, Adam. Let's go, Bulls.
Put the Bulls above the kids' future. I love it.
But a Friday night event.
Friday night school thing,
Not important, I guess.
All right, so let's hear from the stream team. Let's hear your predictions. Who do you like in this one? Are you siding with TK? Can the Bulls pull off the upset? Or do you like the Bucks? And if so, how many games? Is it a sweep? A lot of people are picking this one in sweep, I've seen. Seeing a lot of Bucks in five. Maybe think Chicago can stretch it out a little bit longer. Okay, let's get to the other series in the East that we know and are very excited about. Saturday, April 16th, 6 p.m. Eastern start. Game one, Sixers Raptors. It's in Philadelphia at the Wells Fargo Center. What do you got here, Tass? Where do you want to go? Raps have been hot. That's the thing. Like, yes, the Sixers have more wins, but the Raptors 34-17, basically since we went over to 2022, and 7-2 against the top four teams in the East, including two wins against the Sixers here recently. So, what do you think of this one? What's the key to the series?
Well, yeah, people will look at that record, that 34-17 record there in their last 51 games and say, this team is probably a good regular season team, but the Sixers are going to have the best player on the floor that is unstoppable. It's going to be tough for the Raptors to slow down Embiid. Now, they got a bit of a template from watching the way Karl Anthony Towns was guarded. They got to throw so many of their 6'9 bodies at him, and they're going to do a good job of that. But Embiid should win his minutes when he's on the floor. He just should, and he will. He's done that against the Raptors. I don't know if they can sign Marc Gasol back for game one, but they don't have a guy that can guard him. That being said, the Raptors just are going to be resilient when Embiid goes to the bench. I think Embiid just got to play a lot because they shouldn't feel comfortable that James Harden's going to pick up that slack as the secondary guy. Mm. And the Raptors are going to throw so many different 6'9 bodies at him to try and speed him up. He hasn't looked great. Now, I think Harden will probably be good to start the series if we look back at the Harden series in the past. game one, game two, feeling good. Things just kind of go downhill from there. I'm buying in the Raptors. Pascal Siakam has just been playing so well. And of course, he can't match Joel Embiid as a star, but I think he's going to have a really good series. It's going to be interesting to watch the first two games if they put Matisse Thybulle on him, because Matisse Thybulle can't go to Toronto and play because of the vaccination requirements. So that, I think, is going to throw off the Sixers a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know who really guards Siakam. Of course, Tobias Harris will get some minutes, but Siakam has just looked really, really, really good. So I'm buying the ensemble is when it comes down to it. What we saw in the last game recently with the Raptors taking care of the Sixers, throw a lot of bodies at Embiid, win the non-Embiid minutes, and just get freaking creative. Chris Finch got creative, helping out Karl Anthony Towns, finding a way. Nick Nurse, he's going to find a way to throw bodies at Joel Embiid. I just mentioned that because I like the Nick Nurse factor in this series. Sometimes when you got guys like four guys, let's say, having their eyes on Embiid, it keeps everyone engaged. Mm-hmm. And this is a big series for the 5, 6, 7, 8 guys, for OG Anunoby, for the three-point shooters just waiting for Pascal Siakam to make a play. The Raptors are deeper. And that's more of a belief thing. I mean, Embiid should dominate and should win this series, but I'm just buying the Raptors' vibes, defensive tenacity, and depth.
Well, Shu had a great breakdown, his little preview for NBA.com, and talking about how the Sixers bench could determine the series, what you're talking about there with Embiid. When he goes to the bench, they fall apart. In each of their two post-All-Star losses to the Raps, Embiid recorded a positive plus-minus, with the Sixers outscoring Toronto by 15 points in his total 75 minutes. These were the two regular season games. Philly was outscored 61-36 in Embiid's 21 minutes on the bench in those two regular season games. If that sounds familiar, again, this is Shu, because the Sixers were outscored by 109 points in 99 minutes with Embiid off the floor back in the 2019 conference semifinals, where Kawhi ultimately hit the shot in the corner. That was the story there. Embiid was awesome. When he was out there, Sixers would win or lead. And when he would go to the bench, it would all be given back because, mm-hmm. They just couldn't hold on to it because of the Raptors' depth and stuff like that. So that's why you go get James Harden, in theory, right? Like, Harden, he has to be either the second or third best player in the series and prove that he's got this extra gear that we're like, oh, maybe he's just saving it, or maybe he doesn't.
I haven't seen any evidence that he does still have it, and that's
especially against a Raptors defense. Yeah,
and he just seems to have been, after his initial burst when he got in Philadelphia, they had a bit of a soft schedule. He looked good, but since then he's kind of looked like, and the last game against the Raptors, he was like, yeah, I'm just not in it. I'm just not feeling it. And he had 15 assists in that game. People say, well, he's distributing, but he needs to be way more aggressive scoring the ball and taking it at defenders. And this is another problem. If you look at who the Raptors can put on James Harden, like an OG Anunoby.
Well, Barnes will probably start on him.
Probably, but you've got so many guys who can just get there and physically can get right in his space. And because he doesn't seem to have that explosiveness anymore, he's not blowing past guys like Anunoby. And then I love OG at the other end. When he came back from the injury, his health is going to be a bit of a concern because he's missed a lot of time there. Mm-hmm. But in the five games he did come back, he was shooting the three ball really well and just giving the Raptors another body, another defender, another guy who can spread the floor. Fred's the same. I think that's the concern here for the Raptors. Are these guys 100% healthy? Fred's played a ton of minutes. He's had a lot of missed games towards a stretch here. He's going to have a big series. I said the Raptors are going to devour Philadelphia in the series. I mean, you can't say that and then say, well, I picked the Raptors in seven. So I have to pick them basically in five or six because normally you would say best player in the series is what you want on your team, and I think Philadelphia has that. But when he's not on the floor, I think then the gap is enormous between the two teams and heavily favors Toronto in that sense.
So, where it's so different when Siakam is not out there, been by far the Raptors' best player for the last couple of months. It's not like they completely fall apart because they have all these crazy, like, Precious and Boucher and Burke's going to give you minutes and Thaddeus Young. It's
and like, the other thing, like, when you look at Embiid, as great as he can be, I think he does wear down when he has to play 43, 44 minutes because his body just, he can't. It's not like Giannis, who seems to grow another, physical size when he gets out there. We've seen that. And Embiid, he's probably looking at this series going, man, I am going to have to carry these guys. And that's not a good sign for Philadelphia, especially, again, when we know Doc Rivers has had some playoff mess-ups more than, anybody else. You mentioned Harden already. Tobias Harris is another guy that I'm like, oh, God, I wouldn't be relying on him to get you through a series. And then you got Niang.
But he will probably have a game or two.
Of course he will. Of course.
He's got to win that one, though.
He's the Chris Middleton light Ferris wheel. Sure. It's like there are times where you're like, yeah, he had 34 and 12 and was really good, and then he just doesn't impact the game. So.
And Maxey here is in like his first real like important series, too.
Yeah, he can't be their second best player, though. As good as he is, I love Maxey, but he's got to be their fourth best player at minimum, I think, because I just think you've got to see the veterans step up, and I don't have a lot of faith in those veterans. So I'm sticking to the devouring.
If you're devouring,
can six be a devourer? Probably.
I mean,
not,
I guess
really.
I guess six could be a devourer if there's like a couple blowouts in there. Yeah, maybe the Sixers squeak out a close one. I could still look at that as a devouring. Yeah,
the Tybal thing as well is huge. Tybal is a brilliant defender. You know, he gets in those passing lanes. He's long. He can cause guys like Gary Trent problems. Who Gary Trent, I think, is a bit of an X factor there for the Raptors. So if he can't play in two, potentially three games in this series, that's going to be massive. They haven't got anybody who can replace what Tybal does. Now, Tybal offensively is almost the complete opposite. He can't hit that three-pointer. He's not a reliable shooter. He can fill the lanes. He should do more of that. But the Sixers offensively aren't relying on him. They're relying on him hugely for defense.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because I've seen some people wonder, is it actually to the detriment of the Raptors if Tybal can't play because of what Nurse can do and how creative he can get of leaving a guy like him? Yeah, he's awesome defensively, but you can sort of just totally forget about him, and that sometimes fits into the game plan of what Nurse wants to do and run bodies at guys and doubling Embiid, but we will see. Trey, what are your thoughts on the Sixers-Raptors here?
This is definitely a styles make fights kind of matchup, it feels like, because for as much as we're saying the Raptors are a bad matchup for the Sixers with their depth and their athleticism, like Embiid is a terrible matchup for the Raptors. They got nobody that guards him, so it's kind of feels like this comes down to the 8 minutes a game that Joel Embiid doesn't play.
Weird. Yeah.
Like, can the Raptors win enough in those 8 minutes? Because even if you look at the playoffs, like last year when it was coming down to it for the Sixers, like Embiid was going like 42 minutes in a game seven. There's an opportunity there where he has to go to the bench at some point. It'll either be Paul Reed, maybe DeAndre Jordan.
I mean, Doc Rivers has said this. He's like, we're gonna go Jordan if it's a big, and we're gonna maybe go Paul Reed if it's
Yeah, Nick Nurse will find a guy to leave in this series. Like, Matisse Thybulle won't be there. He'll find a guy. Yeah.
So it comes down to like Embiid's minutes. He's got to stay out of foul trouble as well. And I don't necessarily know if there's somebody on the Raptors who's going to get him into foul trouble. Maybe that's when the Tybal absence comes into play, is in those games 3 and 4. Maybe Siakam's at the rim a bunch. Embiid picks up a couple of quick ones, and suddenly they're playing a James Harden-led lineup for more than they're comfortable with. So his scoring, I'm with you, Lee, is an X factor. And then Niang, Harris, and Green making three-pointers, I think, is going to be huge for the 76ers as well, because Nick Nurse is going to get funky with it defensively. It'll be hard for Joel Embiid, even when he's playing. It'll be hard for James Harden. It's going to just be tricky to get shots. Surely their three-point shooters are going to be open. We've seen Danny Green be one of the streakiest shooters out there, Tobias Harris as well. And Niang has had some good games, but if he's not hitting, he's kind of a detriment to your team. So their three shooters have got to shoot. And it's going to be tight, you know, like, is Embiid good enough to win it in 40 minutes?
Yeah.
A lot of the times he is. I think the Sixers have won his minutes when he's on the court in 5 of their last 7 matchups against the Raptors. So 4 minutes a half are going to be very, very harrowing for the Sixers, it feels like.
Yeah, and I continuously say, you got to play Embiid more, got to play Embiid more, but I'm with you in that it's probably like a 40-minute barrier.
Yeah, he can't play. He's not like a KD-built guy. I mean, you can't play 40 minutes.
You just can't. And so those minutes, it is weird analyzing a series and talking about it that way. But yeah, those minutes are obviously key. But I think Joel Embiid just looks at James Harden and just wants him to be a little Jimmy Butler-like, a little bit more like the Harden that they expected. And there's a funny video. Well, it's funny if you interpret it as funny, with James Harden practicing the last couple days shooting threes and Joel Embiid just sitting on the baseline just watching. What's this guy going to do? He's just watching him shoot threes. And really, if James Harden is anywhere close to MVP level, they could have the two best players in the series.
That's it to me.
And that's the scary part. So I think we'll see some good Harden games to start this series. But yeah, the Raps literally have 4 starters that they can throw at him and rotate with Barnes, Siakam, OG being the 3 main guys, and then Fred is, you know, he's a pest. He's a bull, and you can't move the guy. So I think he'll be tough to play against. The deflections, it's Harden just has to make up his mind and just, you know, toss some shots up. Hope he gets some foul calls. And
well, they'll live at the line. There'll be a lot of that. There'll be time for rest with guys shooting free throws for Embiid to be like hunched over grabbing his shorts because he's going to have to play a lot.
Be also interesting to see how Nurse attacks Harden defensively.
Yeah.
And just say, all right, whoever he picks up, you just keep running, go straight at the paint, because that's another problem Harden has where he just checks out defensively. Mm-hmm. But he, I mean, this is, they got him. They got him. They
got him. Well, that's the thing. I mean, even Sixers fans, I'm sure they're hoping Philly wins, of course. Yeah. This is a nice little, call it whatever, a rivalry, I guess, sort of brewing here between these two teams in the same division. But if you're betting on James Harden in a playoff series to come through 4 to 7 times, like, I'm going to bet against that, especially what I've seen from Harden over the last couple weeks, which is why, also, homework card being played, of course, I think the Raptors can win the series, of course. I think it's going to be close, though. Very, very close. And it will probably be these fringe players, the Tobias Harris's, the OGs, the Gary Trent's, you know, the Niang's even, like, who pops off in particular games here. Because the stars should be good. Embiid's going to be a monster. I think Siakam can outplay Harden. I think Van Vliet, depending on his health, can outplay Maxey. And then it's, we get into these, like, sort of role players. I'm going to go Raptors in 7. I think this is going the distance, and I'll take the road team to win in Philadelphia, which is maybe a little weird, but that's where I go. Raps in 7.
I'm going back to my devouring prediction. Okay. I say Raptors in 5. I honestly do feel way better about Toronto than I do about Philadelphia. Yeah. There's a lot of questions there.
Okay. Are you going to classic Raps in 6? What do you feel?
Yeah, I'm
going
to go classic Raps in 6.
Okay.
I do think the Sixers are going to be better than we expect. I do think Harden's saving it a little bit for the postseason.
Why do you say that? Honestly, I'm just curious. Why do you say that? Because I guess I also think it's somewhere deep down inside, but
Because Harden, as much as we criticize him in big moments, in fourth quarter moments where he was the number one guy, he doesn't have to be the number one guy on this team. You know, he's going to pass off over and over and over again in the fourth quarter to Embiid. He just has to get them there to the fourth quarter, which he hasn't.
So he has to play those minutes when Embiid's off and lead that team and not
and be better,
give up a lead.
And be better than he has been the last month. Yeah. He just can't look like that guy. And I would worry if I was Daryl Morey making this deal for sure. You know, 32-year-old with that hamstring injury from last year. He doesn't have the burst. I get that. But for one series, it could happen either way. I'm not taking him. No way. I'm taking the Toronto Raptors in 6.
And Trey.
I got to swerve. Got to swerve here. Wow. Sixers did lose a Game 7 at home last year in the playoffs to Trae Young. But I'm going to go with the Sixers in 7.
Well, okay. So a tight series here. Competitive series.
Yeah, a competitive series. I think Embiid and Harden should be at their freshest playoff wise because it's the first round, so
they had a week off.
You should be good to go 40 minutes a night at this point, so I think the high-end talent's gonna matter a little bit
if my prediction holds and they do it in 5. I am excited to see the Philadelphia crowd's reaction if Harden is like, you know, bricking it and just not putting it. It'll be incredible.
Oh yeah, that'd be a game 5 at home.
Yeah.
Woo. Okay, let's hear from the stream team. Who do you like in this one? Obviously see a lot of people picking the Raptors, some Sixers fan saying, yeah, you got Embiid. We'll see what you get from Harden. Let us know who you got winning this series. Very excited for this one. Not excited, though, I got to admit, to start standing in front of the television again during Raptors games.
You're going to get practice tonight, man.
I am in standing room only situation out of the Hawks game. Yeah, it's just...
Can't do 48 minutes anymore.
I just... Yeah, I'm older. Smart. You're right.
Get a yoga mat.
I know. It's more...
I can definitely still stand.
I'm not that old, man. But
you're running marathons. I hope you can stand.
The anxiety is just... the living and dying with every possession. It's... I don't know if I'm mentally ready right now, so we'll see what happens.
Why don't you glue your feet to the floor? Then you won't move.
Well, I should glue my hands to the ceiling.
Bat style. Just hanging.
All right. Can't wait to start breaking down these series as they kick off on the weekend. We're going to take one more break. Before we go to break, like the video, subscribe to No Knocks on YouTube. And when we come back, we don't have Tweet of the Night. No. Get out of here. Trey. Hey, Gareth. Get the guitar. Trey is going to play the Timberwolves of Minnesota, the Werewolves of London remix. So don't go anywhere.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, back with No Dunks in the Classic Factory. No tweet of the night tonight. No, Trey Kirby promised the Wolves fans out there that if Minnesota actually made the playoffs, not the play-in game, they had to get into the playoffs, that you, in working on practicing the Werewolves of London remix, the Timberwolves of Minnesota, you would bless us with a rendition.
Yeah, I think it started, I said, if the Wolves go to the conference finals, I'll play it. But I saw that they're only one win shy of however many wins they had during the entirety of 2004. So I think this counts. I've never played a guitar and sang in front of people before.
Huh.
Also, never played this guitar before.
Mm.
Also, never sat and played and sang this song before. JD, let's give it a shot.
All right. Here we go. Trey Kirby doing the Timberwolves of Minnesota.
Timberwolf with the Chinese menu in his hand.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Walking through the streets of St. Paul in the rain. He was looking for a place called the Target Center. Trying to get a big dish of beef chow mein. Ah, ooh, Timberwolves of Minnesota. Ah, ooh. Ah, ooh. Wolves of Minnesota. Ah, you hear him hollering around your kitchen door. You better not let him in. Little old lady glued her hand to the floor last night. Timberwolves of Minnesota again. Ah, Timberwolves of Minnesota. Ow, ow, Timberwolves of Minnesota. Ow,
keep it going.
This is the guitar solo.
Yeah, guys, email in your NBA questions to nodunks@theathletic.com. You keep going. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok @nodunks.
Wrap it up, buddy. Coming
get yourself
back.
An athletic subscription. Go to theathletic.com/nodunks.
Yeah. He's a hairy handed gent. Ran a mucking cat. Lately, he's been overheard in Minneapolis. You better stay away from him. He'll rip your lungs out, Finch.
Yeah.
I'd like to meet Glenn Taylor. Ow, Timberwolves of Minnesota. Ow. Of Minnesota.
Drop your awoos in the stream team.
Well, I saw Anthony Edwards walking with KG.
I didn't realize he was going to do the lyrics.
Doing the Timberwolves of Minnesota. I saw Carl Anthony Towns walking with KG. Doing the Werewolves of Minnesota.
Sure.
I saw D'Angelo Russell drinking a pina colada at Trader Vic's. His hair was perfect. Yup! Yeah. Ow! Timberwolves of Minnesota. Ow! Ow! Timberwolves of Minnesota. Ow!
Yeah! You thought the Wolves celebrated last night? Nothing on TK! putting it down. Good stuff. I didn't realize you were doing the whole lyrics. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I thought you were just playing the guitar. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Yeah, well, yeah.
How'd that feel?
Nailed it.
Guys, we're going to see you tomorrow here live at 10 a.m. Eastern from the Classic Factory. Yeah, take us out.
Take us out.
Until then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
None of that was planned. The bridge worked perfectly. You're setting up our emails. JD just got back from vacation. Doesn't get much better than this. We're taking our shirts off as soon as the cameras are done rolling.
Embrace the day, people!
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.